and I'm head of science, head of chemistry here, and I've been teaching around about a dozen years now before having a sort of background in academia and industry. So I've worked in a number of universities, sort of had an enjoyable academic background before becoming a teacher, and now, you know, I really enjoy teaching the upper end students. I really enjoy teaching 11 and 12. I mean, we'll talk about some bits and pieces, but I think you quite often see them really grow up about now, sort of midway through year 11, and start to really turn into students rather than pupils. There's different opinions about when you start using the word students, but for me, they start to turn into students in year 11. I really enjoy watching that process and watching them go from, I mean, the students in here today are all really exceptional students, and many of them really start to switch on midway through year 11 and then accelerate and do fantastically well right at the back end of year 13 and beyond. And I thoroughly enjoy watching that and being part of that process.
Thank you. All right, let's fire away. So if you wanted these guys in front of us to only take away one piece of vital advice about GCSE science, either trilogy or triple, what would that be?
I would say that the thing that I think is probably the one most important thing is understanding the difference between the students that do really, really well and the students that do well, but perhaps not quite as well as they might have done, is what they do independently. Now, as teachers, we give them loads of clarity and guidance and you know what they need to do, and there's loads of stuff that comes from the pastoral side, from their mentors and from the heads of year and all that kind of stuff about how to revise and revision programmes and, you know, organising themselves. But the students that do the best every year are students that are self-motivated and that do independent work themselves. They work out what they need to spend time on. They spend time on that thing. They know what the weaknesses are. They know what bits and pieces they're not very good at, and they go practice those bits. And there's some stuff there around motivation, which, you know, we might go on to talk about. But for me, if you can persuade them, or we can persuade them to do work that they've chosen to do, they're the students that end up doing the best. Probably the one thing.
Can I pick up on something that you just said and actually open this up to our sixth formers as well? So if I was a parent sitting here, I would say, you're 100%, I agree with you, that the intrinsic motivation is the key between the students that do well and the students that do incredibly well. But how physically would you say, as a parent, you can facilitate the conditions where that improves?
That was the other thing I sort of made a note of, which is that, you know, I'm here to talk with you about science. I'm happy to answer questions about them preparing for science exams and so on. But as a parent that sort of have, you know, they've got kids similar age to yours, seeing it from that side is really interesting. It's really difficult because you've got to be careful not to be a teacher at home and say, you know, you are doing this now. And I think they need to maybe make a revision plan. It's not something my son would have ever done, but some of them want to make a revision plan and be really organised and say, I'm doing it every Saturday at that time and I'm doing this and so on. For some of them, it's much more flexible. And it's work, you know, it's just using the right language about asking them what it is they're going to do. What's your plan? What do you need to do to get there? And you seed it rather than demand it. I think as teachers, we often, and we have to, sort of demand much more. You are doing that homework, and if you don't, there are some sort of consequences. But when you're encouraging them to do independent work, where you're not sitting over them, we're not in a private school where they're all doing, you know, enforced homework being watched over by somebody. They've got to sit and do it because they want to, and they've got to work on the things they want to. So seeding that with questions is probably, as a parent, how we go about it most of all, I would say. But in terms of, when you said how, do you mean in terms of what should they be doing exactly?
I mean exactly as you just said. So how do you create the conditions? I think you said earlier, they're not babies anymore. I'm lucky I can pick up my 3-year-old if he's being naughty and whack him on the naughty step. You can't do that with 16-year-olds, can you? So no, I think the answer is what I was looking for, this idea of how you create the conditions so they come to it themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned earlier that these students are exceptional. I wondered, ladies, would you mind telling me about, sort of, was there a light bulb moment for you in terms of the general intrinsic motivation where you were, actually, I do want really good GCSE results now?
I mean, for me personally, my mother never was like, you have to get 9s, which I think is the main thing, because looking at my peers, a lot of people that lack the motivation is when the parents force it, saying this is the education, all 9s. Because then you sort of don't want to do it because of the stress levels. Mm-hmm. It's a fine balance of it's great, it, you don't need all nights, but it's something that is a good thing to have. You know, it's nice, it looks nice. But also, I've always liked school, and I think a big part of it is also helping. So instead of saying, at this time you're revising, is sitting with my mum and do I sit down and going, what do you need to do? What is the priority, the one, number one thing where you're going, I don't know what to do for this? And even if it's flashcards, you know, testing, and just being there like, you don't have to do it, but how can we get to point B and how can I? Even if you come up to me and be like, okay, I don't know how to do this, finding resources with me. With resources, we get loads of them, but finding the best ones is always the most time-consuming thing, I'd say. What about you?
Well, I'd say my parents weren't very involved in my kind of revision process. It was definitely very independent for me, kind of finding that motivation. And I didn't always have motivation. Like, I'd say definitely kind of in year 10, beginning of year 11, I was like, oh, I don't really want to start revising. But I'll say it now, starting early is the best thing to do. Even, as you said, even if it's just like a couple of 30-minute blocks a week, just trying to stay consistent, kind of getting in a routine of it. But I feel like sometimes revision timetables aren't the best for everyone, and I found that for me. I'd much rather kind of make a to-do list of maybe, I don't know, a few things I want to achieve this week, and then it just kind of makes it a bit more flexible. Like, for example, kind of, I'd be like, okay, this week I want to do a couple of science past papers, I want to review some flashcards on this topic, and especially kind of, I definitely focus definitely more on like the things that I'm kind of not so good at. So for example, I think English is definitely one of my weaker subjects, so I'd make sure I kind of allocated more time for that. And also another kind of key motivator for me, I found this really good app on my phone. I think it's called Flora, and I think there's definitely apps like that, and they're so helpful because what they do is that you can like kind of set a timer of how much time you kind of want to allocate to that revision, kind of put your phone in another room so it's not distracting you, and if you complete that time, it will like grow trees and like flowers, and it's actually really good and really helpful, and it kind of helps to motivate me personally. But yeah, it's whatever works for you really.
That's brilliant, thank you. Ed, do you have anything to add?
In terms of motivation, one of the things is that one of my thoughts in the back of my mind is how would I feel if I got to results day and didn't get the grades that I wanted because I wasn't revising enough. And I feel like stress, in a way, is a good motivator. That if you, it's kind of balancing, because if you're not stressed at all, then you're not going to feel like as engaged, you're not going to revise. But if you do kind of have it in the back of your mind, you'll feel like you want to revise and you'll feel like you want to do something. And then through that,
it's a very fine balance, isn't it? Because we don't want to put, you know, I was a year 11 tutor last year, and some students, I'm obviously not going to name names, but some students found the pressure almost intolerable, that they'd be very, very anxious going, approaching the exams, and some students were very laid back to the point that they didn't do anything, and somewhere in between those two. So I think I agree with Edward that you know, there is a little bit of a worry and stress there, but we all, there's nothing wrong with that to motivate, as long as it doesn't go too far. And as parents, we don't want to be pushing too much and fighting them. And the arguments about phones is really scary. There's some stuff about motivation that came up. You know, sitting in a bedroom on your own for hours and hours and hours isn't everyone's cup of tea. And so actually encouraging, and I've done this at home as well, it's worked, which is that you're struggling with motivation, why don't you work downstairs? Sit at the kitchen table. You know, we'll make it quiet, but we'll be around. And it reminded me of when I've had physio exercises. I mean, I've been to physio, they give you 8 weeks of exercise and you start really well, you do a week. And then the second, third week, it sort of fades off. But actually, if I knew I had to go back and see the physio and tell them what I'd done, you know, almost having someone that you can show, look, I'm doing this. So doing it in the kitchen, mum and dad can see what you're up to or whatever. Or teacher can see what you're up to. And that's really powerful. It works incredibly well.
You can give them lots of positivity as well. If you did a little bit of revision last week in the kitchen, I know such a big thing, they'd probably be a bit too much. But, you know, if she's in a room, it's like you said, oh, you don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Do you? They might say they're revising, but you don't actually know. So that's a really good idea.
As a student, I remember when I was doing my degree, I had a list of, say, 20 topics that I had to study. I can't remember what they were. But I numbered them. And again, I think it was partly just because to force me to do all of them. So I agree with you. I'm not a personally a fan of revision timetables, but I had a list of things I wanted to do, so 20 topics to study and a way of going about it. And possibly also I wanted to tell my parents what I was doing, so I'd go to them and say, pick a number between 1 and 20. Now I've done 7, they say 13, oh no, not 13. But I'd go and do 13 and I'd say, yeah, I've done it. And so that so little things like that, for me, worked really well. But it is really important that they do independent work beyond what it is the teachers are telling them to do. It was the answer to the one question I've done so far.
That's a good question, it's a lovely start. So bringing it back down to science now, yep. Specifically, what sort of revision techniques work particularly well for your subject, would you say?
Right, so I think, going a bit general again, at risk of that, we've been, the last couple of years, the school's been, I think, really brilliant at giving kids loads of advice about how to do revision. You know, revision timetables, talking about getting the phone out of the room, all of that stuff's been really powerful, really good. The one thing I think we're a tiny bit at risk of doing is giving them too many choices about what you can do for revision. And we made these last year, and I want to modify mine a little bit, and the ones in science, because I think too much choice can be problematic. So I listened to a podcast over Christmas. You don't know Dr. Michael Mosley's on Radio 4, does all this stuff. So he did a podcast with someone called, I can't remember the first name, his name is Chatterjee, maybe Dr. Chatterjee, mm-hmm. who does all this stuff around happiness and so on. And one of his big things, it made me think about this, I sat there, was about choices. And he was saying that, you know, some people like Mark Zuckerberg has essentially wears the same thing every day. He doesn't have to choose what he's wearing, and that's why one of the reasons a uniform is good. I think we give them too many choices about what to do for revision. So I'd like to say to you three things for science, and I've spoken to the other two heads of science today, head of biology and physics, and we all agree if they're going to do three things, these is what they should be. One would be, obviously, past paper practice. And the best place to get past papers from is a place called Physics and Maths Tutor. There are other places, but that's got loads and loads. It's got past papers. It's got past papers organised by topic. It's got revision notes in detail, kind of a bit like a revision guide that tie in with it. It's also got answers to those questions. So past paper questions. Another one is a resource that we pay a decent amount of money for each year, which is interesting to know if you guys liked it, but it's a website called Educake, and we use that to set homework for kids right from year 7 up to 11. But it's also got two ways into revision within that website, which we show them, and also, you know, we'll talk you through I think that is that evening happening again, Mr. Channing.
Yes.
So there's an evening where I'll show you how to you know to use it for revision at some point as well. So the Educake is one. Do you guys use Educake a bit?
Not
so much. Certainly the less motivated. It's a slightly splashing around in the shallow end. It's a bit easier than doing past papers, but it's nothing wrong. You know, I think it's really powerful. Sitting on a bus, you can do 10 minutes without any bother. I think we underuse it actually. And the third thing is flashcards. Flashcards, the best ones are the ones that have made themselves on the things they know they don't know. I don't know the definition of, or I don't know how to calculate surface area or something. You know, so they put a flashcard. On the front is the question, how do you calculate surface area? And on the back is how to do it. It's the sort of thing that kids can easily, you know, mess up on. But they can make their own, and they put them in. There's techniques for using it that they've been taught in mentor time. So the ones that you get right, you maybe put over here. The ones you get wrong, you put over here. You do those ones again later, for example. If they don't want to make their own, they don't like that, they can buy flashcards. And you might have all got an email from, hopefully you've got an email from me this week saying that you can buy flashcards for science through the school at about half price of what you can get them yourself. So you've got a week or so to buy those if that's something you'd like us to do. So they're the three things.
Thank you. Science is very, I'm an English specialist, as you may already know, and the science and the English curriculum are very different in that there is a lot more to cover in science than there is in English. So we're really lucky that we can start revision earlier. So I suppose my question to you is, with all of the many choices that students have, thinking back to what you said about choices being sometimes a little bit of an issue, what topics should they be prioritising, sort of ideologically, but also in your experience from the PPEs?
Always for chemistry. So I'll go through for chemistry, physics and biology, stuff that we've identified as probably the most important thing. So for chemistry, atomic structure and bonding are always going to come up. They're always going to be significant, always important, and they underpin everything else that that happens. So the paper one is atomic structure and bonding. Get that really, really sorted. And in paper two, there's a big topic on rates of reactions, which is really important too, and that's got explanation stuff, which is quite often long answer stuff, as well as calculations and uses of graphs and so on. So if you're going to narrow it down, they're running out of time and they're going to do something, it's those things. For biology, Mr. Howard recommended for paper one, photosynthesis and plant science, always comes up, big topic. And for paper two, homeostasis, in other words, nerves and hormones, that kind of stuff is what he recommended. Mr. Wade for physics said, for paper two in particular, it's forces paper two. Thank you. Yeah. So forces is the main thing he said is the one thing to focus on. And actually, paper one is a lot easier than paper two, and the scores nationally in all three of the subjects are typically a bit lower on paper two. And I kind of wanted to come back to this later on, but I might as well mention it now. Which is so those are the topics. Any questions about those topics before I move on to what I was going to say?
Let's go over the biology.
Photosynthesis and plant science.
Yeah.
Homeostasis. Yeah. What we've noticed with PPE stuff and mocks, and exam analysis in previous years is that, nationally and us, is that paper two tends to be slightly lower scoring, marginally, and actually our drop is less bad than nationally, so we're reasonably happy with where we're at as a school. But I think, again, we've talked about motivation quite a lot. And when I was talking to Year 11s as a form tutor last year, I was talking about the fact that the students who start early, but also the students that are not panicking and doing, now leaving everything to the last minute and focusing a lot on the early papers. So the students, in other words, that start early and have a much more balanced and long-term revision that takes them right to the back end of the last exam. So the whole process is, maybe 5-6 weeks? And They've got to be prepared for that. It's very, very much a marathon, and it's very much not a sprint. And quite often we see that students go crazy for the first few exams, and it slides away. And I think that's one of the reasons that paper twos for sciences, which are always after half term, the back end of things, tend to do less well. So it's trying to get them to work on those paper two stuff early. But I think it's a more general point that not to forget the stuff that comes later on. Did you guys find that it's hard to keep yourself going, to kind of get yourself up on a day off and kind of go, all right, I've done an exam this morning or something, I've got to prepare for tomorrow morning's exams now. All you want to do is, just play on your Xbox a little bit or something. So I think that's really important.
I don't know the answer to this. Can I ask, is there different grade boundaries for the different papers, or is it a same grade boundary?
So they get one score, mm-hmm. Which is each paper's worth the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
They get one score, and that score is given a percentage. So they don't grade each paper as such, but you could work out what each paper, you can work out which paper's harder and easier. But I don't think it matters. In the end, they get a total number of points.
I just wanted, it's a moot point now, but I wondered if you concentrated more on the lower scoring paper two, I wondered if you could play the system even further by taking advantage of the fact that everyone else in the country hasn't, but that doesn't
work. I don't
work,
think so.
It does.
I think our kids, particularly physics, tend to do really well on paper one. I mean, if I'm really honest, and I don't think anyone mind me saying this, but I think if there's one paper that we're looking to do a lot better on this year's physics paper two, again, we did better, didn't do too badly last year, but it's definitely an area to improve. So, keeping in mind that that's late, it's late on, and certainly in physics, they'll be doing plenty of stuff on that.
Okay, so when do you finish teaching new content? Because obviously it changes.
Yeah, so English finish about halfway through year one, right?
Yep, we are finished. We've been finished for the last 14 years.
All of us, all the triple science courses, so I don't know whether your children are doing triple or trilogy, but all the triple sciences will be three GCSEs. They'll be finished within a week or so after Easter, more or less. The trilogy will be finished a fair bit earlier than that. So that gives some time to do the work in class, and we're talking next week in our department meetings about exactly what our revision programmes are going to look like in class and how we're going to use that time effectively. What I would say is that is don't panic though, because inevitably, due to weird things like bank holidays and all sorts of other stuff that can happen, people get slightly out of sync from each other. So you might hear, and again, I noticed it a lot with my form last year, people are stressing because that class has already finished, and that class has finished 2 weeks ago. What's going on? This is a problem. But it's really not a problem. The teacher will get through the content and have some time for revision. And I'm not going to talk about examples here, although I can think of them, but I'll talk about my old schools. I used to work at a school in Sittingbourne, and my boss would always hassle me because I used to finish way later than him. A month or so later than him. I'd go a bit slower. I'd maybe spend an extra lesson on the required practical. I'd maybe spend more time making sure they could actually understand bonding and all this kind of stuff. And in the end, I mean, you can probably guess where I'm going with this one. My results were far stronger than his. So, I wouldn't panic if the students are finishing a little bit later than their peers, because people always worry about that. Don't let them worry about it. All the staff in science will get your kids in a good place in good time.
We've mentioned some resources, both sort of pastorally in terms of revision practices, but also Educake and other things. Are there any other resources that it's worthwhile us telling these parents about that may well?
I think I've covered the ones that I would mention at risk of giving you too many ideas. So the revision cards that you can buy through school, preferably their own ones. The physics and maths tutor and Educake. There's plenty there. If they use those things. There are loads of other stuff. Save my exams used a lot in maths, for example. There's science stuff. There's loads of places. YouTube though is one place where, personally, those of us of my sort of age will remember that we didn't used to use YouTube or videos and so on to help us. But actually, I now accept they're quite powerful. Some of the videos have really nice explanations of stuff. And I would encourage for science two YouTube people that I think do good work. I only wince occasionally at their work, but there's one who's really boring, but he's bloody good actually. And that if I say Blue Science Guy, everyone knows what I mean, right? It's freesciencelessons.com. But if you say Blue Background Science Guy, they'll know exactly who you mean. Dull as dishwater, but he manages beautifully to summarise what they need to know for every paper. The other one, which is a much lovelier, a bit more padded out, nice long explanations, Primrose Kitten. Do you guys ever use Primrose Kitten? I think she's brilliant, and she does lots of stuff. Does she do maths as well as the sciences?
She's everything, right?
Everything, right? So the sciences, she's really good. I think she comes across as knowing her stuff. There's only once and I've winced at something that she said. But it's, pretty good, actually.
It's also worthwhile. I'm going to say this in the English team topic that's coming up next week. If you've been invited already, please do think about attending. That lots of our cars now actually have access to sort of our mobile phones, as you know, so we can make calls and send things like that. And Audible, obviously, is a really good resource. And so Spotify you can pay for. Well, you don't have to pay for it. It's free with advertising. Lots of the podcasts and lots of the YouTube videos that we do in English also have podcasts, and so your child is trapped in a car. And again, this goes against everything you're saying about not being too forceful, but I'm going to say it anyway, just in case it's of interest. To and from school or to and from visiting family up north or wherever you go, part of being sort of discursive and collaborative about your family, see whether or not there's anything out there that might be useful for you to whack on in the car, just for half an hour maybe, and have a discussion about, oh, I didn't know that, that's interesting, teach me about that,
So we do it in year seven. Your homework is to go home and tell your parents what you've learned today, specifically teach them what photosynthesis is. We don't do that in year 11, and I don't think we'll start doing that in year 11, but there's no harm in it coming from you guys, you've got an elevator pitch, tell me about about that in 1 minute, see if they can make sense of it. They'll realise if they don't know it very well then.
Absolutely. So after we did the last round of PPEs, we surveyed your young people and we asked them what they thought they did best. And not necessarily their best grade, but the thing that they were most proud of, the grade that they were most proud of and why they think they got that. And then the grade that they were most disappointed with and then why they think they got that. So taking sort of a holistic view across all of the 170 plus students, a lot of the students talked about careless mistakes. I think something like 14% of students, when asked about their disappointing grade, talked about careless mistakes. So I suppose my last question to you is, what sort of careless mistakes can happen in science that's really going to hemorrhage grades, and what can these parents be aware of in terms of...
You're not going to like my answer, because I'm going to be honest, I don't believe in the concept of, oh, it's just a careless mistake. I get really grumpy with Lou back. I think Lou's the only person I've taught here, but Lou will back me up. If a student says, I've just made a, oh, it's, I just made a silly mistake, I won't do that in the exam. Well, yeah, you will. You just had an exam and you made that silly mistake. That's because you haven't done it enough times. You know, you haven't practiced that skill. So they often just dismiss things that they think they can do by saying, yeah, but I knew that. I'm not going to do that in the exam. So I would say that it's not to treat any mistake in exams that we do just in class or the mock exams, the PPEs, as silly mistakes. Actually say, you know, I just didn't know that all that well. I don't think I've answered your question, because you're saying what sort of things might
I
slip up on.
To rephrase, sorry to bash back at you again, sir, I suppose common misconceptions would maybe be... I'm not a scientist, but in English often students misuse the verbs when they're talking about what Shakespeare's purpose is. So they say, Shakespeare attacks the patriarchy. Well, no, he's not picking up an axe and attacking the patriarchy, but they think that that's a sort of synonymous with critique, and therefore that would be a common misconception there. Maybe born out of lack of understanding.
I think I'm going to struggle to come up with one or two that are going to be obvious. What I would say is that if the students are doing the three things I've suggested, then they'll find those things that they're getting wrong, because they're using the answers in the back of the flashcards, they're using the mark schemes, they'll spot the mistakes. As long as they do something with that and make a new flashcard or put it in the I don't know flashcard pile and not go, oh, yeah, I knew that, I'll put it on the I know it pile. I'd say that it's our job in class to bang about those things rather than me trying to, you know, pull a couple out of thin air.
Yeah,
that's
no,
right.
No, okay. Of course. Have you got, sorry?
Exam technique, so you can... you could go into an exam in blind panic. Mine would be physics. And in that state of blind panic, you can immediately go off on the wrong course. You can realise that halfway through, for example, in paper two, answering a longer question. That can lead to two things. One, stay calm, start again, or redirect what I've already done. Or two, go into a further blind panic, which will destroy you for the rest of the exam. I don't know if you're teaching them what to do when they turn that paper in, specifically techniques.
I'm not sure if you've done it on a department-wide level. I certainly, as a teacher, said, if you get to a question you can't do or you're not sure how to tackle it, just turn the page. Because they're so big these days. I mean, they have to do a lot of questions in science. There's two papers for triple and 140... Well, 1 hour 45 each or something, 105, no, I can't. Yeah, that's right, isn't it, yeah. And so they just turn the page and just come back to where they've calmed down. Yeah. I certainly used to, as a student myself, you know, panic a bit at the start of an exam, and so to calm myself down, I'd find a question that I just knew I could just walk through, you come back to it, and you can process then, because without getting all sort of sciencey about it, that adrenaline coursing around your body doesn't help you think straight, does it?
No.
Which is the point you're making, isn't it?
I think. So what you're suggesting, and this would be told to them, is move on.
I've said it and talked about it. I would encourage you to say it, but I'll also encourage it when I talk to the department next week. So I think that's a really good point you've made there.
Well, I used to get to exams, I used to get panicked and stuff. I used to read through questions, most questions, except for that fucking maths, the computers goes, is this the hardest? So my brain can, whilst I'm doing these ones, I can think about what I'm going to write.
And it builds up your confidence.
And you can plan it too.
Yeah.
I'm doing this one right, I can do that one next.
Yeah.
And as you're doing that, you can plan in your head.
Yeah.
So Louis, to clarify then, it's about reading those more difficult questions. So flipping straight to the back when you sit down, reading those difficult questions and then going back to the start and just letting those percolate in your brain. Okay.
That's quite an unusual approach.
I know. I
think that's a really good one. Time is important.
Yeah, time is important too.
There is roughly slightly more than a minute a mark, more or less a minute a mark, plus a little bit of breathing space. I'm not personally a fan of reading the whole paper first, and sometimes, you know, you might want to do that, but making sure they read the question a couple of times, lots of teachers will get them to highlight the command word. What is it they're actually asking for here? So when we're doing, you know, practicing class, and when they're using past papers themselves, realising what the question's asking, if it's a state or explain, for example, or show that, or whatever it might be, understanding what those things mean is part of what we will do in class. But if they're doing past papers themselves, they'll see what the marks are for.
They'll see those questions.
And I got a lot better as a teacher when I started doing examining, because I started to really understand what it is the marks are for. And if they mark their own stuff, to a large extent, that's incredibly powerful. You guys do that, I'm sure, that you pass papers, and you and learn so much from doing it.
Make flashcards out of the questions, didn't they?
Yeah.
And just write what these are, what the mark scheme says, so then you know what they want to see.
And in science, it's verbatim. I mean, I assume in English that, you know, finding their own way to put stuff, maybe using some of the skills they've been taught, or certainly using the skills they've been taught, is really powerful. But in science, say it. No, don't come up with your own version of this. Say exactly what I've said, you'll get full marks, it's easy. You know, that's one of the reasons that I think it's the GCSE science is actually, you know, reasonably straightforward. It's big, lots of content, but a lot of the material, particularly material to get kind of, you know, the lower grades, you can just recite stuff that the teacher's told you is in the revision guide. Obviously, the questions that are going to get you to the 8s and 9s, they're going to require application and thinking a bit harder and rearranging equations in ways that maybe they've not seen exactly before. But there's a lot of stuff which is, don't come up with your own version of this explanation or this definition. The reason that sodium is more reactive than lithium is, and then just bang through it. You know, exam technique again, 6-mark questions in science. A lot of them think they have to write an essay because that would fit with what they've been maybe taught in history or religious studies or whatever it might be. But in chemistry and physics and biology, 6-mark questions can be set out as a series of short sentences making each point. And when you look at the mark schemes are set out in exactly the same way, and they pretend that some of the marks are for quality of communication. In fact, when I've sat in exam meetings with other examiners and they say, well, if they make those 6 bullet points, by definition, they've used high quality communication. So it is set things out bullet by bullet, hopefully in a coherent order, and you don't feel like they've got to turn it into a beautiful essay. They just make the point and move on.
Ed, you were going to mention something. Sorry.
Exam technique. I wouldn't. I wouldn't read through the whole paper, but every once in a while, I would see how far I've got, and then look at time left, see if I need to speed up, slow down, and try and make it so I finish about 10 minutes left. Yeah. Because you don't want to go too fast, because when you're just sat there checking, you're never realistically going to see a change. It's the first time you read something, that's the way you're always going to reread it. Like, the paper I finished fastest in, I think, maths, was my lowest scoring one, but the one went slowest, where I read everything properly, was my best scoring paper. So that was my exam strategy.
No students, I mean, there might be some exceptions in the room, but no students get 100% in papers as well. It just doesn't happen. So if they get to the exam, they have got 10 minutes, which is a really good plan. It's like, okay, my job now is to find my mistake. And I used to do that. I started that approach, I remember thinking about that when I was doing my degree particularly. It's like, okay, where is it? I'm going to find you. I know it's in here somewhere. I've written the number of, you know, do stupid things like put the numbers the wrong way around or something like that. So I'd go through every, if I had time, I would always go back and try and find my mistake, or I used the wrong word, or, you know, something like that. So try, if they've got time, go find the mistake that they've made. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm conscious of the time and I'm conscious of your time. Thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to end the session with a little bit of feedback from you, Lou. And the problem is, that's the issue with going last, isn't it? A lot of the stuff we've probably already covered. So if there's anything that you want to sort of skip over, that's fine. But yeah, Lou, as I say, Lou is our new head boy and excellent scientist. So it might be worthwhile hearing, not just from me and Sir, who haven't been in the classroom in that sense in a long time, no offence, Sir, but someone who's been there very recently. Louis, over to you.
Hello, I'm Louis. That's quite a nice introduction.
Thank you.
How revision suits is different to everyone. And so I love flashcards, almost too much for the climate. But that's what I used to do. And I started in year 10, off any topic, I'd try and identify things I was bad at, just make little flashcards after that, to do it as I go. So I know some people in our year last year, they were making flashcards to the night before, and it's good because you're still doing that process, but you always need to get ahead of yourself, and that's when you want to start now. And like Miss said, the little 30 minutes, just do that 10 minutes before, that little flashcard you don't know, and then quiz yourself. Go on to like physics and math tutor, I love, because it's split each topic, in saying you've got your questions and then you've got the past papers at the end. Because you can do past papers too early. So I know once I did biology one way too early, like February. I haven't learned like some of the content. My panics. Yeah. But if you do the revision and identify the stuff you don't know now, then you can go move on to past papers and work through that and get better and get confident too. Because, yeah, confidence is a massive thing. And then also, I found that I love sport. So I used to do 40-minute sessions, because that's what Mr. Jellick told us to do. So I used to do 40-minute sessions of, say, I focus on a book, so much to do about nothing. And then I might go for a run or play football with a dog in the garden or something. Just like relax yourself. And then I might go do another 40-minute session and then watch a TV program. So it's all about switching off the mind to the perfect balance. This has probably been said lots of the students.
No, that's
fine. And you too. But yeah, it's really important. And then sleep, this is really important too. Sleep and food, really crucial. Like, because that's just how you relax. So, yeah. And like Izzy said, flora, I use quite a lot. I like the gardens. But yeah, that really worked for me. I set it on outside my room and shut the door, and that also turns on notifications. So you might hear the buzzing and vibrating of the temperature you're going to see. And it was quite good because I never admitted to him. But I also had my friends on there, and it was always deep down a battle and wanting to beat him. And he admitted today when I asked him that he also did that too. So it's just that little other motivation that you can just get from doing things.
So you got each other's profile on the floor. That's really neat.
So you've got a more intricate garden than him, and therefore you are.
Yeah, so I'm better than him.
Maybe.
But, and then he admitted today that if I'd done it, he'd want to beat me.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And he'd do it himself.
That's incredible. Yeah, I never even heard that.
So I really like that. And then I was talking to Izzy, Ed, and Susanna earlier. And we were just talking about that, it's quite good. And how we were saying what we do differently. We start earlier, like as much like now, and do the things the teacher said. And I made revision timetables, and I was good for getting subjects, but I wasn't brilliant assigning topics to them. So I go in biology, oh, I know that one, let's do that. It's fun, but it's not what you need to do. And I quickly learned that actually, it's useful. Because I need to assign topics, so today I'm going to do homeostasis, and then tomorrow in chemistry I'm going to do quantitative chemistry, because that's my weakness. And then just work through that, and obviously make time for the stuff that you're good at, just to top it up, but don't focus on that as much, because you're going to do well on that one, so you're confident.
It's an easy win, isn't it, that? It's a false sense of security there, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Because you think you're doing brilliant revision, and like you know it.
But that, I think that's one of the issues with timed revision. And obviously this is the thing, everything that we're talking to you about comes with caveats, doesn't it? Everything can be used and misused in equal ways. So if I'm saying, you know, half an hour three times a week, and yeah, you could have students that go, right, I'm just going to do the three things that I really know over and over again, because that's given me that sense of security. But yeah, I mean, we always say to the students, if you don't want to do it, it's good revision. That's always what we say. Because the more you don't want to do it, it feeds into this idea of like struggle, and struggle is a really good thing cognitively. I mean, I'm no scientist, but you know, struggle helps us to maintain and to build our schemas around certain topics and able to recall them a little bit better. One thing that I got really excited when you said that, because I remember something that I did. I did pretty well at university against quite a lot of odds, and one of the things that I did that really made the difference was, I don't know whether you remember the old hospital comedy show called Green Wing. Do you remember that? Back in sort of the early 2000s. Anyway, it's like totally off the wall, mental, sort of nothing to do with what I was studying. And I did the 50-10 rule. So I did 50 minutes of intensive revision, and then I did 10 minutes of just watching an episode. And things like board games as well, you know. So you do need that release, don't you? So when you finish your revision, I mean, even though we are, you know, we really want our students to do well. You wouldn't be here if you didn't want that too. Instead of going, right, then let's watch this historical drama once you've finished your history revision or whatever, even though we do that with the best of intentions, sometimes it's about playing heads up for 10 minutes or, you know, watching something that's completely different from what you've done already. And I think that's actually maybe a place to sort of say, let's sort of leave you and open up for questions, because I think that you're here because you want your young people to do well. We're here because we want your young people to do well. But that's the point, isn't it? Young people doing well is a nebulous concept. If they walk out of here with 12 nines but are miserable and don't know the value of family or community or friendship or whatever, none of us have done our job correctly. So I think the balance is a good place to sort of tie this up. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I just want to just remind you that we've got revision sessions going on with the kids. So Thursday lunchtime is chemistry, which is going to be helped out by Louis and some of his friends. And after school on Mondays, biology and physics are running, so that they might want to switch between those. But please encourage people onto those as well. And yeah, again, I just want to, as a parent and as a year 11 form tutor and as a teacher, it is about balance. Not all of them are going to do the same thing. Not all of them are going to be like these four in here all the time. They will get there. And don't panic if they're not loving it for any particular piece of time, because it goes in waves, definitely.
Absolutely. A couple from me more generally then. The 31st of January is Parent Power, which we do an annual event based on just you guys. And it's more sort of, it's a pumped up version of this, but sort of generally about getting into good habits. Some of the things I've discussed with you will be repeated that night. That's on the 31st of January after school. And then we've got on the 22nd of February, you've got the information evening, which basically you attend with your young people. And you have breakout sessions for the core subjects, and you're able to sort of ask any further questions that you might want to at that point. There are additional tea and topic sessions which you may or may not be invited to, dependent on need, for English on the 18th and for maths on the 23rd. But yeah, I suppose that's what we wanted to offer to you guys. Is there any sort of burning questions that you have for us? Is there anything that you think, actually, you know, my particular student really struggles with physics but not chemistry, and, you know, is there anything specific that we could possibly help you with?
You touched on the after-school intervention for biology and physics. My daughter is somebody that wanted to go to both, but they run in at the same time. How would you suggest she best
alternate? Yeah. It's unfortunate they're at the same time, but there are only 5 days a week, and Fridays don't tend to get used for interventions because people don't go. The teachers that are doing it are all doing it at their own time, voluntarily, and so saying to people that, oh, you must do it on a Tuesday, I can't do that, because, you know, people are doing it because they want to. So I would say just alternate. They're not typically taught sessions, but if someone's got something they want to go through, then the teacher might go through on the board. Mostly it's students getting on with stuff, but with teachers and very strong ex-students helping. So yeah, I'll just alternate.
So is it a good idea, just touching on what you already said about identifying the things you're not strong at, to take those things to those groups and say, can you use it that way?
Today's one in chemistry, I've printed out a bunch of stuff which is, you know, preparing them for a test which I know is coming up, and stuff that will definitely be in the mocks, which aren't that far away. Sometimes I might guide it a bit. But if they come to me and say, look, I just want to spend some time on this, can you help me? Then yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Do you have a question as well?
Yes, my question was about the flashcards that you were talking about having for sale, and whether they were the CGP ones or they are. I brought those online. So
Could have saved you a fiver probably, but never mind.
No, that's fine.
But we've bought you cake, so.
Please do take it with you, we can't.
Following on from the flashcards that you've got on
Wise
Paper Sale, which are the preferred ones, because you've got a set of three
and a I've well hopefully it's been set up that I've told the finance people which course your young person is doing, and so you just got to click on the one that you need. So if they're doing triple, it's 1350. If they're doing trilogy, it's 850, I think.
Yeah, that's the combined ones.
Yeah.
So they're different sets of
flashcards. Yeah, so the you know, two-thirds of the course for trilogy, all of trilogy is covered in triple. If they're in triple, they do a little bit more. And the triple is three separate boxes, one for chemistry, one for physics, one for biology. The combined science, as it's sometimes called trilogy, is just one big fat box. And it's a bit cheaper to get that than the three individual ones. They're quite good. And I think they're ideally you do what Louis did, which is they should make their own, but this is, I think, helping reduce the barrier to them doing it. And one of the things we were going to talk about is barriers to success, but I think there's one way of reducing the barrier to make it a bit easier for them to use them. Making their own is far more powerful, much harder, takes much longer, but more effective. But, yeah.
You mentioned this three half an hours parent provision mm-hmm. started early, how much of that would you recommend is used for science revision specifically? Or does it matter?
I think it's an individual for individual yeah. basis. So you need to look at your own individual student and their PPE results, and also anecdotally what they feel weakest in. Although there is some interesting stats about that. So 66% of the young people post PPE said that they were surprised by their results. And I thought that was interesting, but also quite scary, because clearly they didn't expect to do either as well or as badly as they did, which means that their perception of their weaknesses and strengths might not be as good as they should be. So I suppose the first port of call is to look at those PPE results, because they're marked by professionals and you know where those are. And then maybe picking out a couple of the lowest performing ones and actually contacting the teachers and saying, what specific part of this test did my child sort of muck up on, maybe?
They should know.
Well, the kids should know.
They've been through the test very, very carefully, and we've made videos of us going through the papers. Right. And they should be able to pick out exactly where their weaknesses were in those particular papers. But those papers were only relatively short compared to the massive papers they do in summer. So, I mean, you could be careful just using the papers. I'd look at the topic test performance, actually, which is the topic that I struggled with most of all over the last 2 years, and spend time on that.
Do kids have access to that in science? Can they take that home?
Yes, and this should be in the front cover of their folders. Perfect. For all the sciences.
Great. And then I suppose you just use your sort of common sense about how to manage that. But as you say, there's lots and lots of subjects, and it does feel a little bit overwhelming at this point. And I do think that having either a to-do list or a plan, or even like a plan in your head, agreed with your young person, it's going to take some of that anxiety away.
Yeah. So that's on top of whatever the normal expectations are for class tests.
I would say, yes. Yeah. As a minimum as well at this point.
Okay.
If they can do 45 minutes 3 times a week, I think that's... I mean, I don't know, what do you think practically, what's achievable at this time? If you cast your mind back to this time last year, what would you say was achievable and helpful for you guys and your successes?
I think it really depends on the week. I was the type of person that started off going, okay, I'm going to have a revision plan, I'm going to do this amount of hours, but it really depended. 1 week I got more homework, where even though that is also revision, if you get set a past paper, in my head that's homework, not revision. So I couldn't have as many slots in that week. So then going off that plan, that would stress me out. I would be going, oh goodness, I'm doing less. I'm still doing work, I'm still revising. In 1 week I'd have at least a week, so I'd put in more blocks. And it also, what I struggled with, also touching what you said earlier, when I got my first round of mock results, I was so surprised. I was like, oh goodness, I did well in that, I wasn't expecting it. And what I found useful is going through even the tests I marked myself, it's so easy to go, oh well, I knew that, but it was a silly mistake, or oh, I got it right, but I'm not actually confident on it. So I'd sit down with the mock scheme, and I'd have a tape, like a little key, where for each mark I'd lost, I'd write what I'd lost it was specifically, not just because it was a sim mistake. So did I not include enough? Was it a key term I misused? So especially in biology with definitions, was it maths? Was it an equation? Did I rearrange it wrong? I'd have a tally of that from all the past papers I've ever done, and also which topics did I lose most marks on. So it's so easy to be like, oh, I'm stressed about everything, but then I'd look at those tallies and be like, okay, this is a problem I need to tackle, these are the topics, and then have those slots for those things. Once I sort that stuff out, I can do the stuff I'm more confident of, to not forget that, and just having a flexible timetable, really, to work around.
Thank you, Susanna. Lovely. Thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. Is there any final questions? I don't want you to leave thinking that you've had any stone unturned in science GCSE. All right, brilliant. Thank you so much. And please do take refreshments. Take many, many things to eat in the car.
I'm definitely taking some.
Please do.